It's the Noon Report from Family Life, bringing a Christian worldview to what's happening in New York, Pennsylvania, across the country, and around the world. Weather with Kevin Williams, sports with Sunny Delfiette, plus special features and reports with the Family Life News team. Now, here's what's happening.
Good afternoon and happy Friday, everyone. I'm Bill Price. More sanctions on Iran. That is our top story at noon. Today, the Trump administration imposing 17 new sanctions on 8 Iranian officials close to the Ayatollah. Here's Secretary of State Mike Pompeo.
We want Iran to simply behave like a normal nation. We believe the sanctions that we impose today further that strategic objective.
Pompeo says U.S. sanctions have had a crippling effect on the economy in Tehran.
As long as Iran's outlaws' ways continue, we will continue to impose sanctions.
Pompeo says today's sanctions will stop Iran's global campaign of terrorism. Iran denies plane shootdown. That is the other big story at noon.
Hitting the plane by a rocket was out of the question.
Today, Tehran said it was not responsible for the crash of a Ukrainian jetliner this week that killed 176 people, despite growing evidence that seems to indicate that a missile took down that airplane. Iran was firing missiles in the area at the time. The Pentagon says the regime shot down the plane on accident. Correspondent Elizabeth Palmer is in Tehran today, where leaders there are doubling down on their denial.
They're sticking to their initial statement. There was another news conference this morning in which they repeated that denial that an Iranian missile could have brought down the Ukrainian plane.
That's Elizabeth Palmer reporting from Tehran today. Aviation analyst Jeff Gazzetti says he cannot understand how the plane was allowed to take off from Iran in the first place, while the regime was lobbing missiles into Iraq.
Why they decided to take off 3-4 hours after an attack instead of just saying, let's stay on the ground for a while.
A new video appears to show a missile hitting the Ukrainian airplane. The Iranian missile strikes in response to the U.S. drone strike last week that took out the top military commander in Iran. Well, as expected, the House voting yesterday to limit President Trump's ability to take military action against Iran by passing a war powers resolution.
The president should not be able to commit the U.S. recklessly and flagrantly to war.
A similar resolution will now be considered in the U.S. Senate on the stump last night in Toledo, Ohio. President Trump talked about his decision to take out Iran's top military leader.
Soleimani was actively planning new attacks. He's no longer a terror. He's dead.
The president says America is safer today because Soleimani is dead. Baghdad says it's time for Washington to come up with a game plan to get our fighting forces out of Iraq. Correspondent Cammy McCormick is at the Pentagon.
The Iraqi parliament had approved a resolution calling for American troops to leave, but more arrived in the country because of the tensions with Iran, and U.S. drones have been flying overhead, all without Iraq's permission, it says. The Iraqi prime minister calls it a violation of the country's sovereignty, and he wants the U.S. to start making plans to leave. A statement says he informed Secretary of State Pompeo in a phone call last night.
That's Cammy McCormick at the Pentagon this afternoon. Reporter Holly Williams is in Baghdad.
Iraqis in general feel worried and fearful that their country is going to be turned into a battlefield between Iran and the U.S. You'll hear that pretty much from anyone who you speak to here.
The Trump administration says it is not prepared to pull U.S. forces out of Iraq. Federal prosecutors say video footage of Jeffrey Epstein's New York City jail cell on a day he survived a suicide attempt is now lost. Reporter Moa Lange has more.
Video of the cell exterior where Epstein first tried to end his life was sent to federal investigators and restored last week. But prosecutors said it's the wrong video. Federal prosecutors said the jail inadvertently preserved video from the wrong tier at the jail. And as a result, video from outside the defendant's cell no longer exists.
That's Moa Lange reporting. 145,000 new jobs added last month. That's pretty much what economists were expecting. Business analyst Jill Schlesinger.
What's fascinating now with the December number in the books is that we see U.S. employers adding jobs for a record 10 years. You know, that is the longest period of time of job creation in 80 years of data.
The Labor Department reporting today that the unemployment rate remained the same at 3.5%. The biggest gains were in retail and in health care. New stats on vaping in these United States.
The number of vaping-related deaths and illnesses has slowed down, but the CDC says there have been more than 2,600 cases and nearly 60 deaths. The youngest victim, 15 years old, last month in Dallas. Doctors there say other medical conditions may have contributed, but the county health director warns that lung damage from vaping can happen very quickly. And the CDC says there's no such thing as a safe tobacco product.
That's Peter King reporting. Coyote sightings in downtown Chicago. At least two reported attacks on folks in the Windy City. This woman's dog encountered one.
I knew they existed, but they're out on the prowl.
Coyote sightings yesterday prompted two schools in Chicago to go on lockdown. January is Human Trafficking Awareness Month. Correspondent Alisa Z puts a human face on the tragedy.
John Cummings with Hope Against Trafficking says human trafficking is modern-day slavery and happens all across the United States. He talks about a 14-year-old girl from an upscale neighborhood who for 2 years was spotted by a neighbor, leaving the house every night at midnight and coming home at 5 a.m. because she was being trafficked.
She said that the person probably just thought that she was a teenager going out to party. And she said if that person had said something to her parents, no telling how much different her life would have been.
It is critical, he says, to say something if you see something.
That's Alisa Z reporting. Still to come on this Friday edition of the Noon Report, it's the rain, not the snow, causing problems this weekend, folks. We'll have the very latest, plus the latest on that fatal helicopter crash in Cumberland County, Pennsylvania, and controversy brewing at City Hall in Ithaca.
Well, good afternoon to all. Going to feel like spring as we head into the weekend with showers and soaring temperatures. I'll be back with forecast details coming up. We'll see you in 10 minutes.
Alrighty, Kevin Williams, appreciate it. Checking the stories, making news where you live in New York and Pennsylvania, Friday, January 10th. Well, they're going to be measuring the precipitation in inches this weekend in much of New York and Pennsylvania, but it won't be the snow. A flood watch up through Sunday.
There's a storm that's going to develop over the Ohio Valley, move up into the Great Lakes during the second half of the weekend. We can expect 1 to as much as 2 inches of rain with that. And on the backside, some strong winds for Sunday.
That's Bob Hamilton at the National Weather Service in Buffalo. He says the rain combined with the melting snow will cause those rivers to rise.
The highest risk for flooding would be north of Syracuse, up on the Tug Hill and up towards Watertown.
Hamilton says this winter has been unusually mild for our neck of the woods as yet another fling with spring arrives this weekend. Temps going to be nudging 60 degrees in parts of our listening area by tomorrow afternoon.
As this system pushes to the east today, tomorrow, it's going to be pushing a lot of heat into places where heat should not be going this time of the year. I'm even talking the ski areas of New England.
That is forecaster Lonnie Quinn. Two people from Orchard Park, New York, were killed when the helicopter they were in crashed last night in the town of Silver Spring, Pennsylvania. That's in Cumberland County. This guy heard the whole thing.
Engine sounded like it was in distress. All of a sudden, a loud clang. And then silence, and a couple seconds later, a really loud thump. And I turned to my wife right away and I said, that's a helicopter. It's going down.
First responders say the accident could have been a whole lot worse.
The good news is, although we have two fatalities, we do not have any injuries to anyone else.
The helicopter en route from Washington, D.C. to Buffalo when it went down in the backyard of a home in Silver Spring. Officials say it's a miracle. No one on the ground was killed. The victims have been identified as two prominent Buffalo businessmen, 58-year-old Mark Croce and 63-year-old Michael Capriotto. Controversy is brewing at City Hall in Ithaca, New York, as the mayor's office there accuses the police department of stonewalling several sexual assault investigations. The mayor says law enforcement in the city has dropped the ball on this issue. Eric Doane is president of the local police union in Ithaca. He says the mayor is using his department as a scapegoat for his own failed policies.
You hire less police officers, there's still the same amount of work coming in. There's only so much a person can do in a day. We strongly believe that this is nothing more than a scapegoating attempt by the mayor to get attention off from his failed policies towards the police department.
A police in Ithaca now asking anyone who feels their complaint has gone unnoticed to reach out to their department. The mayor's office, meantime, has rolled out a 9-step plan to change how sexual assault complaints are handled in the city of Ithaca. A Pennsylvania judge has ruled that parents of children in the Roman Catholic Church and survivors of sexual abuse by clergy members can move forward with a lawsuit against the Diocese of Pittsburgh. The plaintiffs claim that diocese, along with 7 others in the Commonwealth, created a public nuisance by failing to report every allegation of child abuse. They're asking the church to be compelled to release information about all known allegations. New York State Republicans calling for a full repeal of that bail reform law.
This is about public safety, and quite frankly, it's about priorities.
Senate Minority Leader John Flanagan says Governor Cuomo is putting dangerous criminals back on the streets by eliminating cash bail for certain misdemeanors and non-violent felonies. The governor says the law needs tweaking. Broome County District Attorney Michael Korchak says the law needs to be thrown out.
One of the conditions of that the judges are not allowed to consider is if the person is dangerous and their likelihood to reoffend. That's not something that they're taking into consideration.
Senate Republicans in Albany have introduced an amendment that would roll back the bail reform law, which took effect the first of the year. In the ongoing battle to clean up the Chesapeake Bay, Maryland's governor now wants to sue Pennsylvania over what he says is a lack of action to prevent pollution flowing south from the Susquehanna River. Governor Larry Hogan pushing to file the legal papers today. Pennsylvania makes up 35% of the entire Chesapeake Bay watershed, and the Susquehanna River provides half of the total fresh water flow. Subaru recalling nearly 500,000 cars because of faulty airbags.
The recalls apply to a number of Subaru models made between 2003 and 2014 that have Takata airbags in the front passenger seat. The airbags can explode when deployed and send sharp metal fragments flying through the air. These are the same crop of cars that were recalled back in 2015 for the very same reason. The Subaru models join tens of millions of other vehicles with faulty Takata airbags. Bob Price, Family Life News.
Thank you, Bob. A new proposal detailed by Governor Cuomo in his State of the State address this week would expand the Excelsior Scholarship Program to more middle-class families. The governor wants to raise the eligibility threshold from $125,000 to $150,000. That would mean more than 230,000, or nearly 58% of New York State students, would be able to go to a SUNY or CUNY college tuition free. Well, it's not all fun and food at the Pennsylvania Farm Show. Family Life's Brandon Dixon explains.
While the annual event is in full swing in Harrisburg, there's growing concern among Commonwealth dairy farmers about the future of their entire industry. This just days after one of the largest milk distributors in the country filed for bankruptcy. The Borden Dairy Company's insolvency comes mere months after a similar move by Dean Foods, the nation's largest milk processor. Farmers say they'll continue to use opportunities such as the farm show to educate the public about the importance of the dairy industry. The PA Farm Show runs through tomorrow. Brandon Dixon, Family Life News.
Thank you, Brandon. Let's stay at the Pennsylvania Farm Show for a moment. It was Army versus Navy in the battle of culinary superiority yesterday. The annual Army-Navy cook-off has been one of the most popular attractions at the agricultural event since it started 5 years ago. Pennsylvania Agriculture Secretary Russell Redding.
The two teams come together. They have a half hour with a mystery box. Take all of these great Pennsylvania preferred products and then create a meal.
And just like they did on the gridiron earlier this year, Navy came out on top. Their cuisine proved supreme. The farm show wraps up tomorrow in Harrisburg. The Sabres fall on the road. Sunny time. 2-minute drill.
Yeah, we start on the ice in St. Louis. Not a good night for the Sabres, falling to the Blues 5-1. Head coach Ralph Krueger.
We need to get a rhythm here of getting at least 2 wins every 3 games for a while to push ourselves back up into the race. We know that that exists, but at the same time, we are here to continue to grow this group.
At Madison Square Garden, Tony D'Angelo notched his first career hat trick, also had 2 assists for a 5-point night. Rangers doubled up New Jersey 6-3. To the NBA, no Joel Embiid, no problem. 76ers beat the Celtics 109-98. Sixer head coach Brett Brown.
Obviously, we're going to miss Joel for however long it is, but you know, he's a huge part of his team. But, you know, tonight was a good start.
It's been a rough week for John Beilein and the Cavaliers, but Tristan Thompson had 35 points, 14 rebounds. Cavs beat the Pistons 115-112 in overtime. Here's Coach B.
The past couple days are part of today's world, and this is great to get a win for these guys right there. You know, and that's all it's really about. And to start a long road trip, to go and beat a team, just beat you Tuesday night. That is special.
Cavaliers ended a 5-game losing streak. The divisional playoff round of the NFL postseason kicks off tomorrow. A pair of games. Niners hosting the Vikings. Titans travel to play the Ravens. Sunday, the Texans visit the Chiefs. Packers at home against the Seahawks. The winners advance to the conference championship games next week. The NFL has announced its 32 nominees for the Don Shula Award to honor the top high school coach in the country. The Bills have nominated Bobby Bates of McQuaid Jesuit. Steelers nominated Thomas Jefferson coach Bill Chirpak. Dwayne Savage, the Eagles pick. Edgar Warren, the Jets pick. Barris Grant, the Giants pick. And Steve Trevisano, the Browns pick. The nominees invited to attend the Pro Bowl in Orlando January 26th. The winners will go to the NFL Honor Show and will also attend the Super Bowl. All the best. For Family Life, I'm Sonny Dolphiet.
Sounds good. Thank you, Sonny. Still to come on this Friday edition of the Noon Report, the boys are back. A brand spanking new year of Capital Connection. Plus, a famous muscle car hits the auction block.
You know, we spend enough time fretting over the loss of control of our smartphones, especially when it comes to our teenagers. It's time to do something to regain control. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street. This is Breakpoint. When iPhones first hit the market in 2007, they were cool, but they were kind of clunky. Since then, they've gotten smaller and sleeker, and then bigger again. And then they added a camera, and then a better one, and now 3 of them. These things are always changing, and they're always getting better. But they're also changing us, but not for the better. Before the smartphone, Dr. James Dobson used to say that busy schedules were the biggest challenge facing American families. We worked too many hours, and our kids were on too many teams, which left us without enough time to just be together. Today, whatever family time we can find is too often interrupted. At restaurants or even relaxing on the couch with our families, our screens are almost impossible to resist. We're buzzed and notified, beckoned to leave the world we're in for another, to choose people far away whom we may not even know over the ones that are right in front of us. We're physically together, functionally alone. Of course, phones, like most technologies, can be used for good things, too. They can even help our relationship, and therein lies the challenge. Like money, smartphones are an easy scapegoat. We can blame them for our misdeeds, but they are amoral as a technology. The problem is we're not intentional enough with our technologies to think through how we use them and to determine whether we serve them or they serve us. After all, the biggest tempters in our techno-culture are often those things that distract us. If we were to give an account of how much time we've spent sitting and staring at our phones, wasting time that God has given us and we'll never get back, we'd likely be somewhere between embarrassed and ashamed. And it's not just distraction that's the problem. Social media sites encourage comparison and bragging and bullying. Twitter enrages, pornography ensnares, the 24/7 news cycle wearies. In other words, it's not just the phone themselves that's the problem. It's all those nasty windows the phone opens up to us. I realize I'm preaching to the choir. I'm preaching to myself. Many of us are trying to break our bad smartphone habits, and not just for our own good. It's one thing to bemoan what our phones do to us. It's downright terrifying to consider what our phones are doing to our kids. Today's teens are among the first to walk out into this world with the internet in their own pockets. That's why I'm so grateful for a new book, Smartphone Sanity, by my friends David Eaton and Jeremiah Callahan. Smartphone Sanity starts with a refreshingly reasonable premise. Smartphones are here to stay. So rather than offering a
tone-deaf prescription to just throw them away, which I would add would be the quickest way to ensure your kids tune you out, Eaton and Callahan encourage parents to reason together with their kids, especially to talk about how, as parents, we've abused our own smartphones, too. You see, that attitude of humility will go far with a hyper-vigilant teen always ready to spot out hypocrisy. The book also recommends a series of activities for parents and kids meant to foster honest conversation, like making a meal together, engaging in activity that your kids love. The book offers real solutions. In fact, in and of itself, it is a solution. It's written so families can read it and discuss the strategies together. Along the way, Eaton and Callahan tackle all the major issues: screen addiction, social media shaming, sexting, when are kids ready for a phone, how much privacy should they reasonably expect when they have one. David Eaton and Jeremiah Callahan's book, Smartphone Sanity, is a terrific and very practical resource for parents and grandparents, pastors and youth pastors. Come to Breakpoint.org, click on this commentary, and I'll tell you how to get a copy for yourself and your family of Smartphone Sanity. Again, Breakpoint.org. For Breakpoint, I'm John Stone Street.
20 minutes past the hour, the weekend is here.
Good afternoon. Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast. It's going to be a stormy day today in the heartland, where thunderstorms, snow, ice, maybe tornadoes will be a concern across some parts of the lower and central Mississippi Valley. That system will be a player here, propelling warmer air our way, bringing us some spring-like rains. Then strong winds and colder air will follow the system by the end of the weekend. For this afternoon, cloudy, breezy, with rain at times, mild for the season, high in the 40s. Even milder tonight and tomorrow, with showers in eastern and southern central Pennsylvania, heavier, steadier, possibly flooding rains in western New York and northwest Pennsylvania. Temperatures in the 40s and rising tonight into the 50s and maybe low 60s tomorrow. There may be a period of icing, though, tomorrow night near Lake Ontario, west of Rochester. Sunday, windy morning rain ending as flurries in spots. Temperatures tumbling from the 50s and 40s into the 30s.
Thank you, Kevin Williams. You're plugged into the Noon Report on Family Life.
Welcome back to another edition of Capital Connection. Fridays during the Noon Report, we give you, the listener, direct connection to what's happening in Albany and Harrisburg with the experts on the issues at the state capitals. They are Michael Gere with the Pennsylvania Family Institute and Jason McGuire with New Yorkers for Constitutional Freedoms. Our first Capital Connection of 2020. Welcome back to the program, guys. Great to have you with us. And we start off with a bang. Jason, the governor, giving his State of the State speech this week. What was the big headline from the big speech back on Wednesday?
You know, I think the big headline is really what wasn't covered in this address. There's just a long laundry list of issues that the governor wants to address, but none of it dealt with the $6.1 billion deficit the state is facing, or the bail reform legislation, the new law that is now causing people to rise up across the state of New York. So really, it's what wasn't in the address that was the big headline.
We're going to talk a little more about the speech later in the program, but first, let's head to Harrisburg. Michael, sobering statistics when it comes to the sanctity of human life. A lot of what we're going to be talking today has to do with the abortion issue. The abortion rate is up despite the fact that one-third of abortion clinics have shut down over the past 8 years. How do you explain that?
Well, there are a number of factors that play into it. One of the biggest ones is the increase in the use of what we call chemical abortions, the RU-46 and the pills and medications that are sent home to women and girls from groups like Planned Parenthood for them to kill their unborn child. And those rates are up, and that's sort of an easier process, they say, although anybody who watched the movie Unplanned will see just how tragic and difficult a situation that puts women in. Mm-hmm. But that's a big reason why that's happened, as well as then Planned Parenthood consolidating their centers, closing some smaller ones and making bigger ones where they're promoting abortion much more heavily.
Yeah. We're going to talk more about the sanctity of life issue a little later, but let's head back to Albany and the governor's big State of the State speech. You mentioned what was not in the speech, criminal justice reform, the $6.1 billion deficit. The governor's buzzword was
progressive. He used that word several times throughout the speech. Progressivism, pragmatic progressivism. Some would say it's just to avoid the word extreme liberal. But has he been successful, Jason, in the sense of trying to make that word and all that it entails, progressivism, seem mainstream in New York?
Well, I think the governor is trying to ride the coattails of where the Democratic Party is drifting, and that's ever leftward. He has positioned himself during his tenure as a fiscal moderate, but a social liberal. And that has left him to be attacked, frankly, by some on the extreme left. And the governor is trying to balance the fiscal state of New York with his extreme liberal social views. And so the challenge for him is to keep saying it loud enough and long enough that he can try to stave off those that are attacking him on the left and position himself as the progressive in New York State.
All right. Hey, it won't be long before the big March for Life in Washington, D.C. I know, Michael, you've got another big rally coming up later this year at the state capitol. We're going to be talking more about that in subsequent programs. But for those who want to take part in the March for Life in Washington, it's coming up Friday, January 24th. Your group is helping to sponsor bus trips. I cannot imagine how much logistics there are to that. But tell our listeners how they can be a part of the March for Life this year.
Well, we're proud in Pennsylvania that the state of Pennsylvania sends more buses to the March for Life than any other state. And people can find out more about the buses that are available from all over the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania at our website at pafamily.org. We've got a listing of buses and the contacts that you can make in whatever area of the state you are. You can find information about buses. And if you don't find a bus in your area, give us a call here at the Family Institute. We have an 800 number in Pennsylvania, and we can help put you in touch with some folks that may be sponsoring buses in your area.
All right, and let's go back to the State of the State speech. Jason, you can tell a lot about what the governor's priorities are by what he mentions first in that address. You're talking about a $6.1 billion deficit, but yet he wants to borrow $3 billion this year to pay for what he's calling the Mother Nature Bond Act. Explain what that is and why in the wide world of sports would you want to borrow that much money when you're already in the hole that you are in now?
Yeah, it's really quite stunning to think about the fact that, as you said, because we are so far in debt, we're looking to borrow more money. And here's the challenge for the governor. He $3 billion in light of this, you know, $170, $80 billion budget, whatever it's going to be, is really not a lot of money in the grand scheme of the size of our budget. And so it really just shows how bad off we are in New York that we have to borrow $3 billion to do things like work on fish hatcheries and some of the environmental concerns our state has. And no joke, that's one of the things they want to do with this is improve fish hatcheries. Hmm. Well, that would be a general expense under most budgets. And so it's really troubling that now we're looking to essentially, you know, get out a credit card to cover our general expenses here in the state of New York.
All right. Several Pennsylvania congressmen, Lloyd Smucker among them, Scott Perry as well, and Senator Pat Toomey have signed a letter. I think over 200 lawmakers in Washington have signed on to this letter to the Supreme Court asking it to reconsider Roe v. Wade. Michael, any from your state that you think should have signed on to this and did not?
Well, this was an amicus brief and letter to the Supreme Court in a case that's before them looking to overturn Roe versus Wade. And all of the pro-life Republicans in Pennsylvania, in Congress, in the U.S. Senate, signed onto it. Notably absent would be Connor Lamb, a Democrat who ran as a pro-life candidate. He said he was pro-life, but he did not sign onto it, nor did Senator Robert Casey. Bob Casey did not sign on. He claims to be a pro-life senator, and if he were, I think he would be on this brief and calling for an overturn of Roe, because Roe versus Wade is that Supreme Court decision that imposed abortion on demand throughout all 9 months of pregnancy on all 50 states in the union.
Hey, let's head back to Albany again. And Jason, you were there for the speech. About an hour and a half worth, the governor laying out his wish list for this year. When it comes to the social issues, we heard about gestational surrogacy, wombs for rent now in New York, really wants to push that. And marijuana legalization, we knew that was going to come up as well. We did not hear him push for assisted suicide, though. Do you think that is an issue that we will be addressing in the this year's legislative session?
Well, I think it's something we're going to have to work on. Remember, legislation isn't something that happens overnight. You know, things become laws over time. And so certainly there are legislators that are pushing for assisted suicide. Who knows what could happen in 2020? We'll have to be vigilant on that issue. But it was encouraging to see that this was not a high priority for the governor. And if he does not put his juice behind it and kind of get things moving, it does help us as we try to block assisted suicide in our state.
All right. Late word this week. Michael, I know you haven't had a chance to digest the numbers yet, but this Pennsylvania Health Department, 30,000 abortions last year in the Commonwealth, 88% of them are performed on unmarried women. I know that this is a statistic that is sobering and troubling on many levels. Your reaction to that?
Well, when we think about the institution of marriage and the vital role that it plays in the foundation of society and the well-being of children and the well-being of adults, this kind of statistic points out that the failure of marriage has lethal consequences, is what this statistic points out. When you see such a large number, such a high percentage of abortions taking place in this circumstance, it just points to further reasons why marriage is so vital an institution, a God-ordained institution that we should be encouraging in society.
All right. One final question. I want to get off the state of the state for just a second, talk about the Republican Party. There is another party in Albany, just for those who don't know. It's not total one party yet. But some would say the party's in trouble. You've got all these state senators resigning, and then the whole controversy around Brian Kolb forced to step down. How much trouble is the state GOP in, Jason, in this election year?
Well, the state GOP has been in trouble for a long time. I think that's why we've ended up where we're at. The party has been in a very weakened state. I am hopeful that in the midst of all of these retirements and a change in the state chairman recently, and other things that are happening, people are starting to rise up. And I'm hoping that this means a rebirth for an alternative voice in Albany. And so as people see how bad things are getting, pendulums do swing. Perhaps a political pendulum will swing to where it will favor more conservative views in the years to come.
All right. And that will have to do it this week, man. A lot of stuff. Fastest 10 minutes in radio. Capital Connection every Friday. Folks have questions about the good work you're doing in Albany. Jason, where can they find you?
AlbanyUpdate.com.
Where are you in Harrisburg, Michael?
PAFamily.org.
Great show as always. It's called Capital Connection. Comes your way every Friday during the noon report.
Good afternoon. Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast. It's going to be a stormy day today in the heartland, where thunderstorms, snow, ice, maybe tornadoes will be a concern across some parts of the lower and central Mississippi Valley. That system will be a player here, propelling warmer air our way, bringing us some spring-like rains. Then strong winds and colder air will follow the system by the end of the weekend. For this afternoon, cloudy, breezy, with rain at times, mild for the season, high in the 40s. Even milder tonight and tomorrow, with showers in eastern and southern central Pennsylvania, heavier, steadier, possibly flooding rains in western New York and northwest Pennsylvania. Temperatures in the 40s and rising tonight into the 50s and maybe low 60s tomorrow. There may be a period of icing, though, tomorrow night near Lake Ontario, west of Rochester. Sunday, windy morning rain ending as flurries in spots. Temperatures tumbling from the 50s and 40s into the 30s.
Thank you, Kevin Williams. Have yourself a fantastic weekend. Finally, this Friday, a famous muscle car roared onto the auction block today.
It's the 68 Mustang driven by Steve McQueen in the film Bullet that gave birth to the modern-day car chase scene. Dana Meekum owns the top auction house for collector cars.
This is the holy grail of muscle cars. It's the holy grail of Mustangs.
That Mustang car expected to sell for millions of dollars.
Thank you, Gary. Gary Nunn reporting. That is the world we live in for a Friday. Thanks for coming along. Have a great weekend. I'm Bill Price, Family Life News.
You've been listening to The Noon Report, heard weekdays on Family Life. Thank you for listening.